and friends. I'm Val.
I'm Courtney.
And I'm Lisa.
And this is My Perfect Romance.
Bow, chicka, bow, bow.
What about all of you?
Or how about my sweet love?
I think we all have a different idea about what romance is.
Well, what is the perfect romance?
Gosh, I don't know, but let's find out. Hi.
Hello.
How are you this evening?
Good. Tired.
Yeah, me too.
Me too. But that is okay.
Yeah.
We wanted to discuss
this is a
different type of love story than we typically do.
Yes. We read this for book group and our book club, and we really loved it and felt like, yes, it was a different type of love story that we wanted to kind of touch base on.
I think we focus so much on the romantic part.
Like,
we want to decode it. We want to dissect it.
We just want to think about it.
We want to think about it. Because I love a book that makes me think for a long time. And this was one of those books that did that.
It did.
And it's because it was it's not romantic in any way, shape, or form, but it's one of the most loving stories I've ever read.
Well, the protagonist is reflecting throughout the book his own relationships with and love for different people in his life.
Yes, relationships.
And I think that...
Or what carries the weight of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what we, all of us do is... I mean, that's what carries us through our life, our relationships with different people.
Right? For you.
Okay.
Is if you knew you were going to die maybe within this month, what kind of things would you want to reconcile? And what does a person reconcile when they're looking at the end of their life? So the title of this book is When the Cranes Fly South. And it is translated into English, and it was written by Lisa Riedzen.
Ooh, I like how you said that.
Maybe I said it right. Maybe I said it wrong.
I think you said it right, because I was going to say it Riedzen. But I think you said it right. I like how you said it.
Riedzen.
Yeah.
I think that's would be the German pronunciation.
Sure. Yeah, I like it.
So good job. I took 2 years of German in high school.
All right, well, that's why you had to say it.
And all I can remember is that they... speak phonetically.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way something is spelled is the way that it's pronounced, unlike English.
Oh, okay.
So it's a lot easier to read things in German and pronounce them correctly.
All right. I love that.
Because I can still remember the alphabet.
Can you really?
The German alphabet.
Ew, I love that.
I mean,
I took Spanish. I don't remember anything. I maybe can count up to 10.
I took Spanish too in seventh grade.
Look at you.
And I am definitely not multilingual. I couldn't tell you any of the words that were sung at the Super Bowl on Sunday. But I was sad that I couldn't.
I wasn't taken more seriously. Culture, you know, actually learn. It's not like just take 2 years and whether you learn it or not, who cares? You know, I wish it was more like, here, take Spanish, but you really need to know how to speak it.
Well, learning another language... I'm just going to go off for a second.
Okay.
It's really incredible because not only does it teach your brain how to learn something new,
mm-hmm.
which you need to do
mm-hmm.
to prevent mental decline.
Yeah.
But it also introduces you to new thought patterns. I'll never forget, the kids brought home a dictionary and on it, it said something about how the universe is only as big as your vocabulary.
Wow.
Yeah. And that kind of stuck with me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, when you limit your mind like that, you can't grow. You can't progress. You're just going to be stuck in this small little world.
Yeah.
There's something beautiful about language.
Somewhere too that people who have no multiple languages are very good politicians because they can think out of the box.
Mm.
So, you know, because if you know different, like a different meaning for different words, you're kind of working around what somebody's talking about. So therefore, if you are trying to come to a resolution with an issue, you're trying to think of multiple ways you can resolve the issue, just as you would as speaking a language. and not understanding like, okay, this word has multiple meanings or could mean this or that, you know, and working your way through a meaning of a word or a sentence or what somebody's trying to get across. Therefore, you can do that politically when coming to resolutions. So
I don't know. That's cool. Who would have known? Who would have thunk?
It goes along with what you're saying is you're using your brain in different ways.
I also think politicians are very linguistically gifted. Usually.
Sure. Yeah. Of course.
And so they're more drawn. Language comes easier to them.
Yeah.
Because we all have different like intellectual capacities or gifts. I should say.
That makes sense.
So they might just be more inclined to learning languages because they are so good with their words anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder. It's kind of one of those chicken and egg thoughts there.
Who's first, bilinguals or politicians?
I don't know. Are they born or are they brought? We digress.
Yes.
Per usual. Yes. So this book, The Prose, this book was written in first person.
Yes.
With very little dialogue, very little action. And so you are primarily in, well, 100%, you are in the thoughts of Bo. And there's very little action because Bo is
an 89-year-old.
89.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
At the end of his life. Yeah. 89. He's living in Sweden.
I can't remember. I'm not sure. But
there were like little context clues that I was like, oh, got to be an Alpine country.
Yeah, somewhere there.
Mostly because of pronunciation of words. And I think whenever they talk about money in a book, I am like, okay, what currency is that? And then I can like, oh.
Well, their healthcare system and wherever they are is really good.
As a healthcare worker, could not stop thinking about how is this all getting paid for? Because here in the United States, if you were to pay for 24-hour care in your home, it would be $20,000+ a month.
Because how many times were people coming into his house? I mean, it was at least 3 to 4 times a day.
At least. And they even had, they had night shifts. That's why I was almost, it almost felt like it was a full-time carers, even though it wasn't.
Yeah.
But just the expense, I was like, how is this happening?
Yeah.
And how are they able to staff this? Because there is a huge healthcare shortage, particularly in caregiving roles. And there's a huge unpaid workforce in the United States of carers.
Yeah.
And if we just paid people for the work they were doing, like, how could that boost the economy? Like, Sweden's figured it out, you know?
Well, I mean, I kind of thought about you when we were listening to this because, you know, I think this probably hit home for you a lot more than most.
Probably. This is my whole career is working with people, you know, in their 65+ years, primarily, but not always, but a lot of end of their life. And I've definitely, I'm not in the hospice end of things. Mm-hmm. I'm in the rehab side of things, but like still I have gotten to kind of witness a lot of beautiful life transitions because of that.
Yeah.
And I definitely play a big role in working with caregivers. And gosh,
it's a hard job. I mean, I just kind of think of the caregivers that are working with Bo, and most of them are very kind and
most. Yeah. They all have their different personalities. He had his primary caregiver, Ingrid.
Yeah.
And then there were, I didn't keep track, but he mentions about 6 or 7 different caregivers.
Yeah.
And I just can't help but compare, like, here, you're lucky to even have one caregiver that comes in for a couple hours a week. And it's not even covered by our healthcare system. You're usually paying privately for that, unless you can be on a state program like Medicaid. And even Medicaid reimburses so poorly that most agencies can't accept Medicaid because they won't be able to stay in business because they can't pay their caregivers enough of a working wage. So it's like, it is really hard to be able to fund caregiving. So the burden usually does fall on a family member that doesn't have a full-time job or a family member that does have a full-time job and they're trying to juggle both. Yeah. And it is exhausting and it is heartbreaking. And so you see Hans, his son, that gets to carry on his very busy job. And he's still a big part of his dad's, you know, care, but it's not in a physical way. It's in a coordinating way.
He pops in, buys him food, kind of checks in, yes. Make sure things are going well.
But the burden doesn't fall on him.
No.
And it's just, it's nice. I wonder if it is this truly how it works in other countries?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I wish it was that way here. I mean, because here's the thing about this book that's hard when you're even, I think, at any age, but maybe, mm-hmm. you know, 55.
Yeah.
My mother is, you know, getting a little older. I'm getting older. So the idea of being in Beau's place is a little more realistic now than it was 10, 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So you start really seeing and empathizing with Beau because, you know, the decline of your health.
Yeah.
And his wife, Ingrid, is no longer with him, right? Because she's in a home.
Yeah.
She has dementia.
She's in a care facility.
And so he's kind of all alone. He has one friend that's still alive.
I just want to point something out because I can't get over the financial aspect of this.
Okay.
I just want to point out how flawed our system is a little bit because, like, you see one person and they are so cognitively impaired that it's a danger. Mm-hmm. And their spouse is the one that's supposed to, like, look after them. And yet they're feeble themselves, right?
Yeah.
And then they're like, okay, well, sell your home so you can get on state insurance so that you mm-hmm. can then be able to afford for your spouse to go. But now you're unhomed.
Yeah.
So now you have to, like, figure out, like, do you have to leave all your friends and family and or move in with family? Like, it's just an impossible situation to be in.
It is.
I can't get over it.
Oh, gosh. I know.
And,
I have a client whose wife is has dementia. I mean, they're both in their 80s, and he is prime caregiver. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as she declines, he has to take on a bigger role in doing everything. And it's a lot. He can't even leave her alone.
Right.
And so that's a lot.
It's a 24/7 job. Because, sleep wake cycle is off kilter. And, you know, most of the time they're not in the best. Our health deteriorates mm-hmm. as we age to some degree. It's just an impossible situation.
It is.
It's just like the idea of growing old here is terrifying.
Yeah. So what would this look like for Beau if, you know, Ingrid was, it couldn't happen. It just couldn't happen.
Yeah.
Because he needs care. She needs care. But, you know, so he's.
Just people are put in tough spots.
Yeah. And so Beau this is where we're thinking it's, you know, we're looking at it as a romance because. Or about love, because at this time of your life, you're reflecting on the relationships you have had,
people
who mean a lot to you.
Yeah.
What does...
Are you reconciling all the things that you didn't get in life, like that you didn't buy or whatever? Or are you reconciling, am I at peace with this person? Mm-hmm.
Did I do the right thing with my wife? Yeah. Did I do the right thing with my son?
I think you stopped caring about whether or not you got to drive whatever your dream car was.
Yeah.
And you really care about what matters.
Mm-hmm. What's that
and
old
that's your
saying?
Relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. That old saying, like, at the end of the day, are you going to be mad that you worked more? Do you wish you had worked more, or do you wish that you had spent more time with people you love and care about?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And so he's in the process of dying. I don't think we know that, or he knows that in the beginning of this book, but he is working through all of these relationships with the people he's loved in his life.
Yeah.
And it's just so sweet. And endearing. And it's what I know that I do this on a kind of a daily basis. You think about your day and how you interacted with people and you're like, oh, that I wish maybe I had said something a little different there. Mm-hmm. Or I wish.
Yeah. We close out our days mm-hmm. by trying to reconcile mm-hmm. how we, you know,
and he's
related
through,
to
like
people.
His life.
And he is doing it. Yeah. His whole life. Yeah.
So he's looking at his relationship with his wife, which he is actually who he's talking to throughout the book.
Yeah. Okay.
The book is kind of...
This is why I loved it. And mm-hmm. this is why I was like, this is one of the greatest love stories ever told.
Yeah.
Because every interaction that he has, either with Hans or every flashback that he's recalling, he's thinking, oh, you would have done it this way, or you would have said this, mm-hmm. or you would have wanted me to do this.
Or I know you would have thought of it this way. Mm-hmm. Or, yes.
And it's almost like they're one and the same. Like they, yes, they spent, I think he said 62 years or 68 years that they'd been together.
Yeah, and it was so sweet. And then he keeps a scarf of hers in a jar and opens so the jar up once in a while so he can just smell her. He wants to kind of try to keep that smell because once she moved to the care facility, she lost her smell. And this is how he kind of keeps remembering her and thinking about her. Oh, it was so sad. I cried. Like when you texted me and told me, like, this is good. I cried. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do it. I'm like, I don't know if I want to cry right now. But it was, I did cry a lot.
Yeah. He's smelling her scarf and it breaks your heart.
Yes.
One of the things that really hit me hard with this book is that, you know, when we have a loved one that suffers from dementia or Alzheimer's, like we almost have to suffer twice.
Yeah.
You lose them twice.
Well,
they're mentally first and then you lose them physically.
Yes.
And sometimes I wonder, like the book Forgetting Alice.
Remember? Yeah.
Remembering Alice? Forgetting Alice? Something with Alice.
Alice.
It was also written by Elisa. I think Lisa Genova.
I didn't read it. Did we read that for book club?
We did. Remembering Alice?
I don't think I read that one.
But
I remember. I know we talked about it. I think it was there at the discussion.
And they made it into a movie, even with beautiful red hair woman.
Yeah, what's her name?
I like her too. Can't remember. But anyway, yeah, like she was determined that if she lost her mind, that was worse than like losing her physical capabilities, because then she was no longer who she was. And that was important to her.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to go on like that.
Yeah. I mean, it raises so many questions.
It does.
Because as I was reading this too, yes, you think about that. You're like, what would I do? I would want to be able to end my life so nobody else would have to deal with me.
Well,
because what's the point? I'm not there.
It's such a heartless thing.
Physically there, I'm like the person, but I'm not.
And the way this was written, it wasn't until about halfway through that I realized, I thought he was reflecting and mourning and grieving his wife's death. I didn't know that she was still alive, but in a facility until about halfway through, and they made that clear because it was such a loss and he's grieving that.
And every time that his son Hans have to go see her, it is wrenching.
It is.
Because he can't connect with her. I mean, she's there, but she's not there. It's not her.
Oh, yeah. No, she outright kicks him out. I'll tell you, I've seen that left and right, and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. And who wants to go deal with that? It's hard.
It's hard.
I know they feel like they should, and they should because they need to go check on her, but really hard.
Yeah. So that relationship was probably the sweetest one of all.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because everything, she is always on his mind.
Yes, because he's talking to her. The book is him talking to her. The other one that was heartbreaking was Sixton, his little dog, who is just,
it's a hound dog.
Sixton.
So he's got a lot of energy.
Yeah.
They need to, a hound dog needs to like run in the woods.
Yeah.
Get out their energy and chase an elk or two.
Yes. And Bo just doesn't have the energy to really take him out. But they love each other.
Dude.
And Sixton is his companion, his little, his just everything. I think
Sixton's his constant too.
Yeah. It's his reason to live.
Absolutely.
So when Hans wants to take Sixton and place them in a home that has younger people who can take
him on long walks.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what he's thinking. I don't think he's seeing it as like if I take Sixton away from Bo, my dad, he'll die. Because there's no reason for Bo to live after that. None. So, I mean, it's that and then his friend. But it's the combination. But I really think that was heartbreaking for me because I kept thinking, what does it hurt to let him have something that's happy? Can't you? Obviously, people were trying to like make it work. They're trying to say, hey, we can let the dog out here and here, and somebody else can come here. And like, what does it hurt to just let this old man die with just peace?
Because here's the question. Because I see this a lot. And this is an ethical dilemma, right?
Sure.
And I understand the son's perspective, because Sexton presented a couple problems.
Mm-hmm.
He gave them Bo purpose, but Bo also felt guilty knowing that Sexton had to get his energy out. And yet he didn't understand his own physical demise. And it put him at a huge risk of injuries and falls.
But he was dying anyway. He'd probably just be happy to die out in the woods.
I get it. And so that's the thing, though. It's like, do have your adult parent keep this thing. This that could cause a lot of additional injury and pain. Because I hate to say it, I can't tell you how many broken hips I've seen because of dogs. So I see that side of it too. Like, I understood.
Sure.
And why he was trying to keep his dad from getting injured. And I mean, a broken hip can be a death sentence.
Yeah, but it was a death sentence anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either way, like, I just felt like it was a death sentence either way.
Well, so, the death sentence came from that loss of purpose. And Hans didn't understand the purpose the dog gave him. And I just kept thinking, why don't you give them a chihuahua? Little lap dog. They don't need to go on little walks.
Sexton was a comfort.
Yeah.
And so he was dying anyway. Why not just let him have like a comfort? Maybe live a little longer, but just be comfortable to have that special thing next to him. That was...
Or maybe you live a little shorter.
Yeah.
Because of the dog.
Sure.
Because it's like it's
or maybe you go ways. Like out in the woods doing something you love to do, you fall and you die.
Which is what almost happened.
Yes.
So I thought that was really great. They were very realistic about, you know, the dog.
And I guess, it just made me so mad because I was like, Hans, can't you see that your father is so upset by this? Oh my God. But I guess you see it too because Hans loved his father and really...
He didn't want him to get hurt.
Yeah. I mean, he's trying to do it for him. He's like, it'll be fine, Dad. You know, like Sexton will be in a better home. He'll be able to get out and he's happy now. And
ultimately, when the carer, Ingrid, said, I saw the family out with him and he looked so happy.
Yeah.
And Bo was like able to resolve the loss of his dog a little bit, but he was...
He's just dying.
But the one thing that I think is we have to consider, it's so hard to grow old because you lose so many people.
Yes.
There's so few people that the few companions you do have, you want to cling to.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like this.
At this
that
point.
That was heartbreaking. I honestly, I want Sexton to stay with him until.
Yeah.
Till the end, too, even though I knew what a danger and what additional problems and threats that caused, but I knew how important he was.
I agree with you, hands down, but
that's a hard decision to be in. I can see both sides.
I mean, and it's a double whammy because Bo's best friend, Ture, they were friends. They've been like very good friends for a long time.
That I loved about this relationship. Ture was they worked at the mill their whole lives. Ture was in management, I believe.
Yeah, he made money or had came
he,
from money.
He came from more money. Mm-hmm. He made money, but that wasn't a big deal to Bo. Bo just he was kind of a simple man. He just wanted to work and provide for his family and come home. And he didn't need anything extravagant. He didn't need to go see the world or anything. He liked a simple life.
Yeah, and don't you think Ture just sort of reached out to him in a way that maybe no other male had, like as far as friendship goes?
I think so, because he was raised very stoically. His dad lacked any emotion except for anger. And so he really didn't know how to express many emotions, but Ture did.
Yeah.
And he helped him be comfortable. And his wife, in fact, I think maybe in that culture, like stoicism is valued.
Yeah.
And so his wife was really uncomfortable that he would have a friendship with somebody that was so different like that. Like Ture looked at the world through maybe rose-colored glasses he appreciated the beauty around him.
Yes, I think so. But I also think he was gay.
Absolutely.
And I think that she knew that.
And the townspeople knew that.
And was uncomfortable with it. But Bo was... Maybe
and I think
a little
Bo knew that.
Kind of oblivious, too. He's like, I know I don't care, but I like him.
I think he knew, but he didn't care.
Yeah.
Because he saw him as another person and another human that was good.
Yes. it was
Bo absolutely knew.
Yes. And but it wasn't even, he doesn't even talk about it like as being
different.
I love that you're saying that because he sees the person, not the sexuality. It's like, I don't care. Like it doesn't, it's not even like, I don't care. It's just like, hey,
it's irrelevant.
This is my friend.
This is my friend. He mm-hmm. treats me respectfully.
I enjoy each other. It was very sweet. And,
I mean, if you think about it, when was this book? It came out in 2021. He was 89. Mm-hmm. I can't do much math, but that would have meant he was born in like 1920s. Yeah. I'm not doing the math really well, but ish.
Yeah. So I'm like going, yeah, yeah, like sure. I know.
I'm just guessing.
I totally think you're right.
Sure.
You do better math than me. So yes.
About there.
I'll just defer to you because you're a better mathematician than me.
So we'll say he was born and then 1930.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's a good number. But at that time, like, I don't know, people were killed, like, for being, or they were in prison. They were very persecuted. And so I don't know that it was ever, like, acted upon, but I loved that Bo loved him and treated him.
And that was a sweet, sweet relationship, too, because Bo, even though Ingrid was, like, did not like that relationship or didn't like, she continued to have a relationship with him. And not only that, he knew that Ture liked children. And so he really incorporated Hans into like fishing trips so that Ture could have that experience of being around a young person. Yeah. And he really acted as like an amazing uncle and person for Hans. And I just thought that was so sweet.
I absolutely loved that friendship.
Me too. Yes, me too.
It was.
And so that sweetest. Was another type of love, which was incredibly sweet and enduring. I mean, the whole book is just so sweet.
When a person can love a person for who they are, look past. I mean, if we could just all see each other as humans, like.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Be amazing.
Yeah.
So I love that about both.
Yeah. If you could just take off the layers, people presenting themselves a certain way and say like, you know, or presenting themselves a certain way or.
Yeah.
I just think we would be much, you would see people for good people and bad people for bad people. And the bad people might not be getting very far in life. The good people might get a little further, maybe run the country and stuff.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. Anyway, the other relationship is Hans, which is Bo's son. And that's also kind of a very complicated relationship simply because Bo's father was not a very good human.
I love when Bo thinks about how his father treated him. Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely treated Hans differently because of that.
Yes.
Like he never laid a hand on Hans. Mm-hmm. He never disrespected him in front of other people. Mm-hmm. Made sure he knew that he was, you know, he looked out for him. Loved. I don't think that love was like, it was really hard for them to share emotions, but he certainly like made sure that like he took him ice skating. I mean, just all of the little ways that he showed up for Hans, knowing that his dad never would have done that.
Mm-hmm. And then
it was beautiful.
It was. And we see that because, well, Bo is constantly thinking about his interactions with his father and kind of comparing them to his interactions just to say, like, I think he was trying to say, I was a better dad. I had a better relationship. I was different. I did it better. But, you know, he wasn't sure. I don't think he was sure. We see it in that. We see when Bo's father was dying, Bo didn't have anything to do with his father.
Yeah.
Didn't go see him die, didn't visit, nothing. When Bo is dying, he's there all the time. He's concerned. I mean, even if he takes Sixton, he's doing it
out of love.
Yes. And he loves his father. And it shows, and even his granddaughter, Hans's daughter, loves Bo and is.
Was it Eloise?
Yes, I think it is. Eloise?
I might have the name wrong. He calls her his little bumblebee.
Yes, and she's there too. And so you can see, I mean, I think in our own eyes, we wonder, like, we don't really understand how we affect people and how people feel about us. And so you kind of get the impression that maybe he doesn't think that he, I mean, he thinks he did, he tried. He tried to do a good job. He did the best he could, but maybe it wasn't good enough. But you see in how his daughter, his granddaughter and his son treat him while he's dying, that he did do a good job. That yes. They loved him and he made an impression on their lives.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They cared about him. And I think it's interesting. I thought a lot about it. He loved his mom.
Yes.
I don't think he ever loved his dad.
No, he didn't.
But I don't, just because you have a child doesn't mean that they automatically love you.
No, you have to kind of earn that.
And he didn't, his dad didn't earn his love.
No, he was horrible to his son.
So I don't think that his dad deserved to be loved by him.
No.
I know. That's such a harsh thing to say.
Well, I mean, when the father, he didn't treat Bo well at all. And it made me sad when you...
He was
when you,
cruel to him.
Yes. It's so hard. It's hard to go...
He was doing to him.
When you Bo revisits those memories, it's very hard to listen to because you. I know how I treat my children. And that makes me sad. Yeah. Makes me really sad that somebody would treat their children that way. Because you think of the little person and how they feel. Little people are so helpless and all they want is love and recognition and support.
And then just literally smack them down.
Yes. To do the opposite just because.
Yeah.
And
to beat them down. It's just
awful.
It is unforgivable. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. He didn't have to love his dad.
No, he didn't.
And I loved that there was that contrast mm-hmm. with Bo. Because he was so kind that you would think, gosh, he's just such a loving person. He's so full of love. He loves mm-hmm. everyone.
Yeah.
But that's not true.
No.
I loved that she did have that contrast.
Yeah, I do too.
Because he definitely did not love his father.
Oh, nor should he have.
Hands down. And so, what other relationships were there?
There was Eloise, the granddaughter, and she was just full of energy. And even like a different, he talks
about. I
loved
the generational aspect.
Yeah, I was just
going
to say that too. Because he talks about always being surprised at how she's talking about all of her feelings and everything that's going on. Like, in her life. Oh, yeah, I'm dating this one guy, but I like this other guy. And I'm dating maybe five people. And this is how I'm feeling today. Like I cried. And then
I loved it when she came to see him. She's like, how are you? She said something about her hair. And he's like, she's like, I'm growing it long so I can, they can cover my boobs. And he just chuckled and just loved it. Like she was just so comfortable. Like I can't imagine,
even kind of reflects on that too. Like, you know, his son Hans can't even be emotionally that free to express himself. But here is Eloise, who is mm-hmm. just this free young person, just expresses herself and talks about all sorts of things. And he just loves it.
I think, and it's interesting because like each generation, because this is really a four generational, depiction to some degree, like his dad couldn't express any emotion except for anger and disdain, basically. And then he could express, you know, a little bit more, and then Hans a little bit more, and then the granddaughter. Like, so each generation is more comfortable.
Now, did they each marry a woman who was very expressive emotionally? When I think about it, Bo's grandmother was a very sweet woman.
She was sweet, but she was very reserved.
She had to be.
She had to be.
She had to be.
It was a protection mechanism.
And I think she tried.
Yeah.
And so he maybe got more of that from her.
Yeah. So that nurturing.
Bo.
From
The Bo's wife, Frederica, was a very warm, compassionate, like, he talks about her family always hugging and, you know, hugging and being affectionate.
Yeah.
So she obviously was. So she maybe instilled that on Hans. Mm-hmm. And then I think there was some references as to Hans's wife being also kind of an affectionate, sort of open human. So I wonder if like just wanting more like a partner that is maybe a little more affectionate, maybe a little more open in their feelings and relationship.
Yeah.
And then that filters
down
into your children. And then they can pass that down on to the next generation.
Maybe that's that's how it works.
Something to think about at any rate.
Well, definitely there is something to be said about just looking back, like mm-hmm. how Stoicism has changed through the generations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Definitely. Yeah. How we express our emotions is very, you know, culturally defined.
Yeah. I kind of think about my boys and just boys in general. I hope that they have a little more loving, just physicality than father.
Yeah. They can express emotions a little bit more.
I hope I've instilled some of that in them. But anyway.
I mean, I think that's a great gift to give to the world.
Well, obviously it impacts a lot of people. I don't know. This was a really sweet book. Thing. And I think when we talk about love, this is about loving a lot of people in a lot of different ways and reflecting how that love transitions over a lifetime.
Yep.
And the love you end up having for people in the end.
That's what you take with you.
Yes, it is.
That's all that really matters.
And one more thing too, I loved how at his end, Beau's end, is just ends up forgiving, like letting go of everything. It's like, what's the point? What's the point of being angry or holding grudges?
Yeah.
You know, like people need to know how I feel. So I'm going to tell my son and I'm going to let go.
I think the part that just killed me was that his son would do something that he was like, wow, that's something, you know, I never would have done.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible. He just did that.
Yeah.
But it never got past that.
Yeah, he could never express it in language.
You should really say something to him about that. It's really neat.
It's so interesting that that can't come out of somebody's mouth. It can't.
It kind of broke my heart because his thoughts were so loving and yet he couldn't get that out.
Mm-hmm.
And it broke my heart because I don't know if this is how men think. Like they have these thoughts that are loving and they don't know how to get them out.
Well, I don't know if it's men or, but I think it's people. There are some humans that are, and maybe we're seeing this like in just how he was raised.
Yeah.
That's not acceptable. You just don't say there's repercussion.
Men are more likely to have difficulty expressing things that are of emotional weight.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I really do think that society and cultures have made it that way.
Yeah. And that's really unfortunate.
And I think that we need to start supporting them in getting to express their emotions.
Yes.
When you have to bottle that up, it only causes hurt.
In so many ways.
Yeah.
It hurts the person. It hurts people around them. It's just a ripple effect. It hurts so many people.
You lose out on so much experience in life.
So for listeners,
that's tell people how you feel.
Yes.
Because at the end of Beau's life, I think that's when he could finally let go, was when he finally got to say to Hans, that was his last word.
I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of you. And that was, and then he
I mean, go. I think Hans knew it, but so it's really nice to hear too.
Yeah.
And I think too bad he didn't say it verbally sooner.
Yeah. How would that have impacted him?
Or Hans, or, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was, anyway, we recommend this book. It was very good.
It was so well done. It was a beautiful love story. So yes, hands down. We can't do our normal rating scale.
No.
We can't say how long would they last because the love of his life, no.
Because it's the end of his life.
It's yours.
We know how that
We know how that goes and all that other good stuff. And there was nothing spicy about this. It was nothing spicy whatsoever.
Yeah, she was crying a little bit, but that's okay.
Yeah, but it's a good cry. It's a good cleansing cry. And it's just, I just love the celebration of life that this book conveyed. It was very well done.
Me too. So we recommend it.
Yeah, I highly recommend
it. Listen to it.
It's one that's going to stick with me. I don't always remember books, but.
Oh, well, let's see too.
It's stuck.
Yeah.
It's good. Well done.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Well,
listeners.
Yes.
Send us your recommendations. You have any?
Yeah. Your love stories, your personal love stories. If you want to be interviewed by us, we interview couples. We love doing that. We've had some amazing people
I've
talked to who have such wonderful stories. Advice? You need advice from us?
Well, we love to give it. Yeah. We always have that. So go to our website, www.myperfectromance.com. And that's how you can get a hold of us.
Yeah, Valerie's not here, so we'll just do an XOXO for her.
And say goodnight. Bye.
Bye.